This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is Chandler Gould, National Association of Wheat Growers. First off, Brad Rippey is a meteorologist with USDA.
Leading this week, not only the nation, but the Midwest, Michigan, 88%, very short to short. Other Midwestern states above two-thirds, very short to short, include Ohio at 76%. Missouri, 75%, Illinois, 72%, and also Indiana at 68%. Of course, that dryness extends into the Northeast, where we see Pennsylvania, 74%, very short to short, New York State, 70%. And then finally, just mentioned that we're also kind of keeping an eye on a subtle drying trend in the Northwest. As far as the Western states, Oregon leads at 64%, very short to short, followed by Washington State at 55%.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Chandler Gould. Chandler is CEO, National Association of Wheat Growers. They're headquartered in Washington, D.C. Chandler, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much. I always enjoy being on your program.
Let's just jump in with both feet here as harvest is moving north now through your home state of Texas. We've had a really wild ride when it comes to weather throughout the 2022-2023 growing season. Where would you put us today as far as current conditions?
Well, you know, especially in our winter wheat states, as you mentioned, Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Colorado, you know, we are definitely seeing the impacts, not from just this drought, but the multi-year drought that we've had, but the dryness that we had during the planting season in September of last year. And then even though the mountains got a lot of snow, the plains did not. And the lack of that winter moisture has taken a significant toll on our winter wheat production this year. You know, we've got some of the highest abandonment rates in the state of Kansas since 1917. And then you can literally drive around and you can see what little corner of what little county got that little bit of rain. And there's some wheat there, but it's definitely going to be a rough year for the winter wheat production.
Now, for some, they look at the recent rainfall events, maybe through Texas and Oklahoma and some into Colorado. I know Kansas is still looking for more rainfall there. But they'll look at these recent rains and say, wow, we've been able to salvage our wheat crop. Is that true?
No, unfortunately, it's good rain, but it's too late. Matter of fact, I mean, we had a lot of growers, their wheat didn't even germinate. So there was nothing. So even though it rained, there was nothing to water. And then for the ones that did get a crop up, it just simply didn't get here in time to help the wheat fill out its head and actually be a productive crop.
And as we move further north, those are some areas that had been dealing with drought over the year and a half or so. But they got some good snowpack, didn't they, and some moisture along the way?
They did. And, you know, as you move, yes, definitely further north and kind of get out of the Great Plains and more of our mountain states and in the Pacific Northwest. You know, they're doing really well. But yeah, Kansas, Texas, Oklahoma, parts of Nebraska, eastern Colorado have really been in what I'd almost say is a 3-year drought, and this last part of it being the worst.
Well, you mentioned drought in there, and you've also talked about the abandonment that we've seen. But at the same time, we've seen a little bit of help coming from the government, and mainly USDA through some disaster aid. Has that been helpful?
It has. You know, this second round of the ERP, Emergency Relief Program, is definitely coming at a very crucial time, especially with these low production numbers coming out. Even though this is for last crop season, you know, farmers only get paid once a year. I know I don't have to tell you and your listeners that, but we have to remind the rest of America that they only get one paycheck a year. But, you know, this was also a smaller amount. The first round of the Emergency Relief Act had $10 billion in it, and this only had 3.7. But what we were very excited about is that the USDA continued to use some of those streamlined efforts that they did in the first rollout where the application was pre-filled out. Really cut down on work in the FSA offices, which many of them, you know, are not fully staffed, and also made it easier for our farmers to go in and apply and know how much they would be getting back so they could work on their balance sheets.
you know, really difficult when you start talking about that balance sheet going in to meet with the banker for growing next season when you're trying to figure out how to put in the ad hoc disaster money. That doesn't really work when you're trying to finance the next year, does it?
It doesn't, and that's just it. It's ad hoc, so it's not even a guarantee. I mean, fortunately, the USDA was able to use, you know, its authority under the CCC to put together this disaster program. But, you know, when it's ad hoc, that's not a guarantee, which is why it's so important that we continue to work on important issues like crop insurance as we are developing the 2023 Farm Bill.
Let's go into that farm bill and the priorities. I would imagine crop insurance would be near the top since you brought that up.
Crop insurance is the number one priority for NOG, maintaining it and or expanding it in the next farm bill. I mean, it is by far the most critical risk management tool on yield and revenue that wheat growers currently have at their disposal.
And again, crop insurance, some outside the industry will say, well, that should cover everything, but it really hasn't. Is that why we've seen more ad hoc disaster money rolling in? Because things like crop insurance couldn't cover it all?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, Tony. And you know, so I've been in D.C. for 23 years. This is my fifth farm bill. And about every 10 years, we come up and say, should we put a permanent disaster bill program in the farm bill? And so we talk about it, and, you know, we did SURE and we did ACRE, you know, back in the 2000s, which wasn't overly successful. And you know, that conversation's happening again. But with the limited money that's going to be available for this next farm bill, I don't see a permanent disaster program going in, which is why it's important that we have a robust crop insurance program out there. And, you know, one of the areas that wheat is behind on is we just simply do not have as many crop insurance products available to us as our sister organizations that with corn and soy. And so that's something that we're also really focusing on, is to make sure that our wheat growers have the same amount of opportunities within that program as the other commodities.
You kind of mentioned in there the funding mechanism of this. We just came through a pretty contentious debate on the debt ceiling. Is that going to play a factor into writing this next farm bill?
Absolutely. You know, we basically were stalled on the farm bill, not on ideas, but, you know, putting the legislation together, because whatever happened with the debt ceiling, luckily it was passed and signed into law, was definitely going to affect farm bill funding. And so pretty much what has happened is, you know, I think we're going to have about the same amount of money that we had for the 18 farm bill. I don't see any place for additional money to come into this farm bill without generating revenue, which I think would be extremely difficult to get through the House of Representatives. So actually, I think that makes it easier for the farm bill to get done this year, simply because you can't really make too many changes to it.
And then, you know, I kind of wonder, based upon how this debate went, whether there will be some representatives, possibly senators from farm states, that have good support from farmers and ranchers, but will be going on the other side of this argument saying, we need to save more money and looking for cuts. Will ag's voice be pretty important going into this?
Absolutely. You know, those 29 Republicans that voted against the rule, and I don't want to get too wonky here, but it is very unusual. And I don't know any time that I've ever seen members of Congress cross party lines for a rule vote. The rule vote, you always vote party. And the fact that you had 29 Republicans vote against the rule to bring the debt ceiling to the House floor has really brought a lot of angst and concern to the, what I would say is the more practical part of the GOP. If you can't depend on their votes in such a narrow, a House with such a narrow margin, if they come down and vote no on the rule for the farm bill doesn't come to the floor. If those 29 people, Republicans, go and vote no on the rule for ag appropriations, the ag appropriations bill doesn't come to the floor unless Democrats support it. And that was a very unusual vote, which we could break that down in a whole different phone call. So, you know, it does make things complicated of how you're going to maneuver legislation through the House of Representatives.
Well, when we talk about the farm bill, though, going back to those members of Congress and for those outside of ag, can we tell a pretty good story. Do we have a pretty good story to tell as far as the return on investment from U.S. taxpayer funds into ag?
Absolutely. You know, the Farm Bill provides a safety net and risk management tools and availability to credit opportunities and actually saves the taxpayer money. And you know, it also does not make a farmer whole. It doesn't earn them a profit. It keeps them in business from one year to the next because of the many variables like Mother Nature that farmers aren't able to manage like you could in another business. And so we actually save the taxpayers money by having the safety net, by having crop insurance, by having credit available to the men and women who produce the food in this country.
And we haven't even talked about the ideas of supply chain disruptions, what's happening in the West Coast as far as the ports go. Are there a couple of other things with about a minute left that are on your radar as we go over through the rest of the summer?
Well, you know, something non-farm bill that we are really working on here at NOG is FIFRA, Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act. You know, so basically it says once the EPA has put a label on this product, every state has to abide by it. It's the federal government, and we have preemption over the states. Well, our favorite state out there on the West Coast, California, has decided, and the Biden administration has decided that FIFRA does not have state preemption. And so this is going to put every crop protection tool on the line where you could have 50 different labels. For every state could set their own standards. And so we are working with our other commodity groups to come back in and strengthen FIFRA to make sure it continues to operate with a federal preemption over state law. Otherwise, we are going to have a significant disaster on our hands for production agriculture.
We covered a lot of ground, Chandler, but if we want to keep up with what's happening with the National Association of Wheat Growers, can we do that online?
You can. You can go to wheatworld.org. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn.
And I can't wait for the official Chandler Gould TikTok channel as well. So maybe that's right around the corner.
Well, I've got a great communications director, Mariah. So we just started doing a monthly podcast, which comes out with our newsletter. So TikTok might be next.
Chandler Gould is CEO of the National Association of Wheat Growers and joins us on today's Agribusiness Report.
Life doesn't come with guarantees, but working with Rob Seco comes pretty close. Our strategic investments in the seed we offer are designed to directly improve your bottom line. From full trait platforms, breeding and development, to field-by-field planning and seed-driven crop inputs, with Rob Seco, you have precisely what you need to improve plant performance and increase yield. Every farm, every crop, and every acre. Learn more at robseco.com.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today, Chandler Gould with the National Association of Wheat Growers.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Keep up with the National Association of Wheat Growers online, wheatworld.org.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
There's a tradition down here in the South. A tradition of hard work. A tradition of straight talk. For more than 100 years, Delta Pine Cotton has been a proud part of that tradition. With proven yield potential and genetics you won't find anywhere else, Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with Strong Cotton from Delta Pine Brand. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
If your crops are not doing well right now because of over a month of no rain in many places, don't blame El Nino in the equatorial Pacific Ocean. USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says the real culprit in this case is a lot closer to home.
A extremely stubborn atmospheric block of high pressure situated across northern Canada.
Big and powerful enough to change the weather thousands of miles away here in the U.S.
And that effectively keeps cold fronts from reaching the Midwest or the Northeast. It keeps tropical moisture from working its way up from the south. And it serves as almost a complete block on rainfall, reaching some of the nation's key agricultural areas. And until that block breaks down, we will not see appreciable rain.
So how long do these blocking high-pressure systems usually last?
1 to 2 months.
This one's been causing havoc for at least a month, not just blocking moisture to the U.S., but causing record-high temperatures and wildfires in Canada. Gary Crawford, Washington.